Hello, I'm Christine, and welcome to this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News for the 21st of May, 2025. Hello, and welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by the sight loss charity Beacon. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. Once you've enabled the Talking Newspapers skill, all you need to do is play Talking Newspapers and ask for the Black Country Talking News. Our Talking News service is also available via the free Wireless for the Blind app. It can be found on the Beacon Centre website, www.beaconvision.org/talking-news, as a podcast via services such as Apple or Spotify, or as a free CD. Simply contact Beacon Centre on 01902 880 111. We hope you enjoy this week's edition. Reading for you this week, we have myself, Christine, Angela, Ian, Helen, Mohammed, Mina, Simon, and of course, not forgetting Roger. In this week's edition, we have all the latest from Beacon with Helen and Mohammed. There's plenty of fascinating nostalgia, along with all the latest news and information from the Black Country. There's even time to make yourself a Boston brew as we celebrate International Tea Day. We have all the reaction to the final football action for the season for Wolves. You'll have to be sharp of mind as we have another quiz from Roger and Mina. We hear from Mina, who has the forecast for the week ahead. Local news to start though with me, Christine and Ian, but first, Angela.
National Express West Midlands has announced it will be scrapping 8 services across the region from the start of next month, with Wolverhampton and Walsall services affected. Passengers have been warned to check their routes as the transport company will be scrapping services, altering routes and changing timetables. Some of the scrapped services will be replaced with one of their 3 new services, however, others won't be served at all. Following routes will be withdrawn. 15A Wolverhampton to Maryhill, partly replaced by service 15 and new service 16A. 20 QE Hospital to Bromsgrove, replaced with the new X20 service between Birmingham and Bromsgrove. 20A, the QE Hospital to Coughton Hackett, replaced with the new X20 service between Birmingham and Bromsgrove, Coughton Hackett will no longer be served. 48A, West Bromwich to Barewood, replaced with the more frequent 48 service, and Diamond 54 service will replace part of the route in Bristol Fields. 934 Birmingham to Walsall, replaced with service 936. 935 Birmingham to Walsall, replaced by service 998 in Streatley. 937 will cover Rough Road and George Frederick Road. Services 77 and 77A will provide an alternative between Walsall and Streatley. And service 936 will provide an alternative between Walsall and Barbican via Sutton Road. The 937A Birmingham to Brown Hills, replaced by service 937. 997S Fortis Academy to Birmingham, replaced by service 997. Further information on timetable and route changes will be published on the National Express WM website.
Hopping off the buses and onto the trains now, where a new safeguarding hub has opened at Wolverhampton Railway Station. The hub, launched by West Midlands Railway, WMR, and charity Rethink Mental Illness, aims to provide people with support and guidance. Rethink will work with local charities across the area, offering people one-to-one support, information and signposting. This initiative is more than just a facility, it's a lifeline, said Thomas Harty, Security and Suicide Prevention Manager at WMR. He said he hoped the safe space would support the hundreds of vulnerable individuals in the local area and using our network. Wolverhampton is our busiest station in the region, with over 6.5 million passengers passing through each year, and I'm looking forward to seeing the positive impact Rethink and our other charity partners will have, he added. Other organisations involved with the hub include the Samaritans, Railway Children, White Ribbon, and the Wolves Foundation. Head of Area at Rethink, Lindsay Gooding, said the charity was proud to have been given the opportunity to create the hub. With support from our partner organisations, we will provide a one-stop shop for people to access support around mental health and well-being, she said. We want everyone to feel part of a community that cares, to be treated as a whole person, to have access to the right help when needed. The Wolverhampton Safe Space was inspired by a similar hub in Hull, which brought about a 63% reduction in people arriving at nearby stations in crisis, WMR said.
And a dedicated interactive hub for the ongoing city centre improvement works has also opened in Queen Square, Wolverhampton too. The Urban Room will provide drop-in sessions at set times, pre-booked meeting opportunities, and direct assistance from staff at City of Wolverhampton Council and contractor Taylor Woodrow. It will give businesses, residents, and visitors easy access to information about the scheme and dedicated support for any concerns or issues they have as the 2.5-year programme, which started in January, progresses. The first Urban Room sessions would initially take place between 12 p.m. and 1:30 p.m. on Tuesdays, with the plan to increase the number of sessions over time. Works on the major £19 million transformation of Wolverhampton City Centre are underway on Darlington Street and will move on to Lichfield Street and Queen Square. It follows extensive consultation with businesses, the public, and key stakeholders. The completed scheme will deliver high-quality improvements such as wider, brighter, safer streets, vibrant public event spaces, more trees, greenery, and seating, and easy access for buses, cycles, and taxis. The aim is to stimulate more visitors and spend with businesses and act as a catalyst for further investment while contributing to creating a pleasant environment to support and encourage healthy city living lifestyles. It is the third and final phase of City of Wolverhampton Council's City Centre Improvements Programme, following completed schemes in the Victoria Street and University of Wolverhampton at the Halls areas that have seen regular events staged in the new spaces, increasing city centre footfall and economic spend, and attracting new investment such as Super Bowl UK, set to open their new venue in the Mander Centre units off Victoria Street on 21st of May. Councillor Chris Burden, the Council's Cabinet Member for City Development, Jobs and Skills, said, "We want people to enjoy our city centre from the moment they arrive, and these works are the next step in our transformation plans that are delivering positive outcomes. This is a scheme for everyone, and the Urban Room is another way we are connecting with businesses, residents, and visitors to ensure they are supported during the works and fully understand it so they can maximise the opportunities it presents to them. Funded totally by external funding, it will create an enhanced walking, cycling, and dwell space, as well as infrastructure for events and attractions, and a better environment for city centre living, which will all help boost the local economy. The works will also complement other transformational development schemes already underway or in the pipeline in the city centre, including the £150 million interchange and commercial district and thousands of new homes coming at Smithgate and Canalside, all helping to create hundreds of new jobs and further investment opportunities." Stuart Townsend, Taylor Woodrow Operations Manager, said, "We are excited to announce our drop-in sessions for businesses and members of the public to address any queries, concerns, or compliments. During these sessions, we will showcase drawings of the scheme, have updates on our social value projects locally, and we will be displaying information, including a video about the scheme. Additionally, we will provide information about our chosen charities, the Way Youth Project Board, and have brochures available for career opportunities. This is a positive step in keeping stakeholders and the passing public updated on how we, Taylor Woodrow, and the Council are working together to deliver a better city centre. Funding for the scheme consists of £13.5 million from the City Region Sustainable Transport Settlement, CRSTS Fund, £3 million from the Towns Fund, and £2.6 million from the Active Travel Fund.
From the pedestrian zones of our city centres to the streets of the Black Country now, where millions of pounds will be pumped into fixing potholes on roads across the Black Country. Dudley, Sandwell, Walsall, Wolverhampton, Solihull and Coventry will get £2 million each to boost their current road maintenance programmes. The £12 million funding, enough to fill 132,000 potholes, has been awarded by the region's Mayor, Richard Parker, from the City Region Sustainable Transport Settlement Fund, CRSTS. It follows a grant of £8 million that the Mayor secured from the government in February. The money will also pay for pioneering new low-carbon surface treatments developed and tested in the West Midlands, which will be applied to roads to extend their lifespan and reduce carbon emissions. Mr. Parker said, "I know that too many of our roads are blighted with deep potholes, huge cracks and craters, leaving motorists struggling with dangerous driving conditions and large repair bills. That's why I decided to reallocate this money to road maintenance budgets. I know our councils will be able to get to work quickly to bring more roads up to scratch and improve journeys for every road user." The additional funding was approved at the West Midlands Combined Authority Board meeting on Friday, May the 9th, a decision that will need final sign-off from the Department for Transport. Transport for West Midlands, which is part of the WMCA, is trialling innovative, longer-lasting road surface materials through the award-winning Centre of Excellence for Decarbonising Roads, CEDR. As part of the mission to create smoother, longer-lasting and low-carbon roads, several councils within the WMCA area are preparing to use their funding to trial these new materials. The aim is to enhance road quality for motorists, reduce carbon emissions and, by protecting the road from potholes and cracks, extend the lifespan of the highway network. The six councils were initially allocated £24 million of CRSTS's money for road maintenance this year. Since then, the Mayor has secured an extra £20 million, doubling the road maintenance budget for the six councils.
Staying on the roads, and a new road crime team has been launched by West Midlands Police in a bid to tackle criminals who use the roads of the West Midlands and make the streets safer for everyone. The force introduced a third road crime team last week, targeting criminals involved in car key burglaries and other organised crime. West Midlands Police said this marked the last stage of their commitment to increase the number of officers responsible for policing roads in the area. These officers use unmarked, high-performance cars, as well as distinctive interceptors, to pursue and arrest suspected criminals. In the last 3 months, more than £1 million worth of stolen vehicles has been recovered by road crime team officers. More than 50 people have been arrested and large amounts of Class A drugs and cash had been seized, the force said. Some of these incidents include pursuing, stinging and boxing in a car on the M5, resulting in the seizure of 36 kilos of cocaine worth an estimated £5.4 million last month. The arrest in February of a man believed to be linked to the theft of cash machines from businesses. Working with another police force in March to successfully arrest a man in the West Midlands who was wanted for the attempted murder of one of their officers. Arrest of a suspected organised crime group leader in Birmingham last month in a van, and the safeguarding of three vulnerable people believed to be exploited workers. The force said the road crime teams complemented the targeted work of the 24/7 interceptors. In addition, West Midlands Police has dedicated road harm prevention team officers who aim to tackle speeding, drink drug driving, mobile phone use behind the wheel, and not wearing a seatbelt, the offences behind most deaths and serious injuries on the road. Superintendent Gareth Mason, head of roads policing in the West Midlands, said, "We are absolutely dedicated to making the roads of the region safer and targeting the criminals who use them. The creation of this third road crime team shows how dedicated we are to that mission. Our officers are working 24/7 as we aim to achieve Vision Zero, working with councils and other partners to halve the number of deaths and serious injuries on our roads by 2030 and to reduce it to zero by 2040.
Up next, we have the Beacon Update, brought to us by Mohammed.
Hello and welcome to the Beacon Update. My name's Mohammed, and here's the latest from Beacon. A huge shout out to Best Wishes, Cards and Gifts. Thank you for supplying the gorgeous balloons for our annual colour run. Your support added that extra pop of colour and helped make the event feel even more fun. We couldn't have done it without you. Thanks for being part of the fun and helping us make this a day to remember. Also, big love to Absolute Apparel Limited. A huge thank you for donating t-shirts for our Colour Run 2025. Thanks to your generosity, more runners joined in the fun in style, and we raised even more to support people living with sight loss. Get ready for a week with a bit of everything in our community activities. On Wednesday, the 21st of May, we have the Black Country Museum, stepping back in time with an audible and tactile tour at the amazing Black Country Living Museum, followed by a yummy lunch. Tenpin Bowling on Friday, the 23rd of May. It's time to hit the lanes again. We're leaving Beacon at 10:30 a.m. and we'll be back for 2 p.m. Our group loves meeting new players. Come and see if you can beat our high scores. Earlier in the week, we had cooking sessions and circuit training sessions. That's it for this week's Beacon Update. Join me again next week, where we'll have even more from what's happening at Beacon Centre.
Thanks for that update, Mohammed. Next up, we have another block of local news. And up first, we hear from Christine.
A former hospital that has been transformed into an apartment complex as part of an affordable rent scheme has officially opened. Nightingale House in Wolverhampton, which used to house the Royal Hospital, was opened by Labour MP for Wolverhampton South East, MP Pat McFadden, at a ribbon-cutting ceremony. The historic site has stood empty since the hospital's closure in 1997, but the Grade 2 listed building has now been turned into 38 one- and two-bedroom apartments. The flats are available as part of a housing scheme offering affordable rent for people over the age of 55. The renovation maintains features of the building's architectural heritage, including three stained glass windows installed in the chapel in 1967. It also features modern eco-friendly amenities such as air source heat pumps for heating to reduce its carbon footprint and improve energy efficiency. The site has been revitalised as part of a wider area transformation made possible through the collaborative efforts of Housing Association WHG, City of Wolverhampton Council, Homes England, the West Midlands Combined Authority and developer Moore Partnerships. On the day of the opening, a former hospital staff also gathered for a reunion event to share their memories of working life at the Royal Hospital. In addition, a plaque sponsored by the Royal Hospital Nurses League was unveiled. Sir Stephen Moss, who has dedicated 57 years to the NHS, unveiled the plaque to celebrate the legacy and care of Wolverhampton NHS staff. A close-up of a black plaque on a table with a crest of arms on it, saying 1849 to 1997. Plaque reads, Wolverhampton Royal Hospital in recognition of the remarkable legacy of care by dedicated doctors, nurses and ancillary staff. The top of the plaque says Wolverhampton Civic and Historical Society and the bottom says Trustees of the Wolverhampton Nurses League. Gary Fulford, Group Chief Executive at WHG, said the former Royal Hospital building has stood empty since 1997. However, its historical significance as a place for people and a place of care has been preserved through our innovative wellbeing scheme. City of Wolverhampton Council Deputy Leader and Cabinet Member for City Housing, Councillor Steve Evans, said, "It is an iconic building in Wolverhampton and has played a huge part in the lives of so many of our citizens. It is also in keeping with the wonderful transformation of the Royal Quarter as a whole over recent years, where the Council has worked tirelessly with partners to regenerate the area as a key gateway to the city centre, driving further investment and giving our residents and businesses opportunities to thrive."
Talking of the significance of wellbeing in places of care, Dudley Council and National Charity Rees Foundation have teamed up with local food outlet Harry's Cafe in Briley Hill to offer safe social space for care experienced people in the heart of the community. Dudley care experienced young people can now receive one free drink per day at the cafe and at a growing number of Rees-affiliated cafes across the country. Located in the High Street and community-driven, Harry's Cafe is a realisation by providers Top Church Training of a long-held dream to operate their own community coffee shop, offering a warm, safe place to come to for food, advice, support, as well as providing group activities, volunteering opportunities and traineeships for the whole community. Care experienced young people simply have to apply for a free Rees guest card on the Foundation's website, www.reesfoundation.org/cafe-connections, to receive their free drinks. Councillor David Stanley, Cabinet Member for Children and Young People's Services, said, "This is a fantastic resource for our care experienced young people. I would like to thank Harry's Cafe and the Rees Foundation for making this happen and providing such a great, safe and social space in the heart of Briley Hill. An example of community-led support at its best." Sarah Collett, Business Development Manager at the Rees Foundation, said, "We are so excited to be launching our Cafe Connections project in Briley Hill. Our ethos at the Rees Foundation is all about bringing care-experienced people together and forming lifelong connections. So this collaboration with Harry's Cafe will help us to provide space for care leavers to come together, support each other and have a great cuppa." Sean Latham, Chair of Dudley Care Leavers Forum, said, "I'm delighted to be here at the launch of this service for care leavers. Today marks the culmination of a lot of hard work behind the scenes to get this off the ground. And I am sure that together with the support of the Rees Foundation, Harry's Cafe will be providing support to care leavers in years to come."
Physical activity is also known to have a positive impact on health and well-being, and Bowls Big Weekend is returning once again this year, with it set to be the biggest yet, with clubs signed up to take part, including clubs in Halesowen, Dudley and Bromsgrove. The event, now in its fifth year, aims to introduce 20,000 new players to the sport. More than 800 clubs nationwide are involved, making this the biggest Bowls Big Weekend yet. The event, organised by Bowls England in partnership with Aviva, will take place from Friday, May the 23rd to Monday, May the 26th. Clubs will open their doors to offer free taster sessions to people of all ages and abilities. Sian Honor, a four-time Commonwealth medalist and Bowls England board member, said, "Bowls has so much to offer as a sport. It really is something that everyone can get involved in. Bowls Big Weekend is also a brilliant weekend to showcase what our sport has to offer. People should definitely get down to their local clubs and give Bowls a go. And who knows, we might uncover some future talent for the England squad. The event is a staple in the Bowls calendar, with 129 clubs having participated every year since its inception. Since the first Bowls Big Weekend, more than 60,000 people have registered with local clubs. Bowls England Chief Executive John Cockcroft said, "We're so proud to be delivering our fifth Bowls Big Weekend over the spring bank holiday. The event has grown year on year thanks to the incredible work of bowls clubs across our country, and it is a key part of the recent growth of our sport. Bowls is a sport that can be played by all ages and abilities. It brings family and friends together and makes people healthier and happier. We encourage everybody to come down and give it a go. You will be assured of a warm welcome, you'll meet some great people, and you'll enjoy the simple challenge of getting that bowl close to the jack." To find your nearest club and sign up, visit the Bowls Big Weekend website.
Now it's time to test your knowledge, as we have the quiz questions for this edition brought to us by Mina.
Hello and welcome to this week's flashback quiz. All the answers you need can be found later in Flashback Rogers' Did You Know feature. But for now, these are your questions. Here we go. Question 1. When was the term the Third World coined? Question 2. When was an X first used as a kiss to end a letter? Question 3. What well-used slogan today first appeared on posters in 1940s in Britain? Question 4. What was hidden in the Eiffel Tower when it was built? Question 5. The duffel coat is named after a town. Where is that town? And finally, question 6. What was found in a flask in a tomb in China in 2019? I will be back later in the show to give you all your answers. But for now, best of luck.
Cheers for those questions, Mina. I'll get my mind working on them. Up now, however, is another block of local news.
Now, for anyone who may, as a passenger or driver, use a car to travel around, then an unusual tip of using tea bags is proving to be particularly effective ahead of morning car journeys and can also help to avoid a hefty fine too. Tea bags, particularly used black and green tea bags, are very effective at reducing condensation and dampness inside cars. The tea leaves contain substances that draw moisture from the air, so they can essentially be used as a natural dehumidifier, which is particularly useful on cold mornings. The last frost in the UK generally doesn't occur until mid-May, and with the Met Office forecasting colder temperatures over this bank holiday weekend, including thundery showers, drivers may find they're still waking up to damp and misty windscreens. But this problem can be avoided simply by placing some used tea bags or small bowls of loose tea around the inside of your car, such as on the dashboard or in the door pockets. Doing so can lower the risk of condensation forming on windscreens, which in turn can help drivers avoid being handed a fine of up to £2,500. The Highway Code says drivers should always completely demist their windows before setting off, and condensation can obstruct this. And if you try to drive with an obscured view, you could be fined up to £2,500 and get penalty points on your licence, especially if it leads to an accident. Ben Pitcher, motoring specialist at DPF Experts, says tea bags are a great solution to this problem, as they're naturally absorbent, cheap, and likely already knocking around in your kitchen cupboard. He explains, tea bags, especially black or green tea, are natural moisture absorbers. Placing them in your car can reduce condensation, especially in colder months. Though they aren't as powerful as professional dehumidifiers, they're a cheap, eco-friendly solution for tackling minor dampness.
Time now to hit the M6 or board the X8 bus, hop onto the metro, or even take a train into New Street Station as we step into Birmingham to celebrate International Tea Day, the 21st of May, to see if we agree with some new research that has revealed Birmingham's favourite brew, and it turns out to be a British staple. According to the latest real-world new tea census study of over 1,000 Brits commissioned by the UK Tea and Infusions Association, UKTIA, regular black tea is still the city's favourite drink. Dr. Sharon Hall, Chief Executive of the UKTIA, said, "For 70% of people in Birmingham, traditional black tea, with or without milk, holds strong as our main infusion of choice, with 15% more likely to opt for herbal infusion and 16% predominantly choosing green tea, according to the UKTIA Tea Census real-world data. Yet the data also suggests that the split between our preferred infusion changes with age." Dr. Hoare continued, "We found some noteworthy differences between the older and younger generations. For example, among the 18 to 24 age group, two-thirds, 63%, said they mainly drink black tea, while around a fifth, 20%, are experimenting with a range of herbal infusions or drinking green tea. That's compared with the 65-plus age group, among whom over four-fifths, 86%, mainly drink black tea, but fewer than 1 in 10 choosing herbal or green tea. The UKTIA Tea Census study data also suggests that many of us could be prone to making tea in too much of a rush. Nearly three-quarters, 74% of people in Birmingham admitted to leaving their tea to brew for less than the 3 to 4 minutes we at the UKTIA would recommend for the ideal cup of regular black tea," adds Dr. Hall. Dr. Hall continues, "Only 5% of people in Birmingham let their tea brew for what we at the UK Tea and Infusions Association would generally regard to be the required time for most types of tea, that is 3 to 4 minutes. That sadly leaves the vast majority of people in Birmingham missing out on the perfect tasting cuppa. Thus, leaving tea to brew for 3 to 5 minutes will ensure the optimal amount of polyphenol compounds are released, such as flavin 3-ols and theaflavins. Polyphenols are natural plant compounds that contribute to tea's flavour and mouthfeel, and they provide nutritional benefits like fruit and vegetables. Although younger generations are experimenting with a range of teas more than their parents and grandparents, our new tea census study data clearly shows that Birmingham's favourite is still a traditional brew of regular black tea. Now then, do you agree with our chummy brummies? Well, we, as a nation, are a minnow as a tea producer, falling well behind the likes of China and India, but we have a historical reputation as a nation of tea drinkers. With thanks to Soundings contributor Lindsay, we now go on an adventure, exploring the cultural impact of tea. The article also considers the mystery behind Earl Grey tea and the crucial question of whether to add milk first or last when making your daily cuppa. So, without further ado, make yourself a Boston brew as we mark the 21st of May and International Tea Day.
Hello, my name is Lindsay. I started producing topical items during lockdown to keep my neighbours entertained. All the recordings are made inside my cosy cabin for that extra sense of calm. And naturally enough, I called them Cabin Conversations. I hope you enjoy them. Cabin Conversations about International Tea Day. The United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization, FAO, observes International Tea Day on the 21st of May. And it is a relatively new date for this Awareness Day, having been officially established in 2020. Prior to that, tea-producing countries outside of the UN had begun celebrating International Tea Day on the 15th of December 2005, like India, Kenya, Sri Lanka, Vietnam, Nepal, and Malaysia, to name but a few. However, all these countries, UN or not, aim to draw attention to the governments and people both working, growing, and trading tea in a fair and culturally supportive way. They want to emphasise the importance of sustainability, along with tea's economic impact in helping to prevent hunger and poverty in those countries. Significant issues when considering that the third largest tea-producing country, Kenya, have professional tea pickers making less than $2 for harvesting an average of 9 kilos, that's approximately 20 pounds, of leaves per day. Of course, the number one tea country is China, producing over 2 million tons each year. They are famous for many types of tea, ranging from black teas through to green and oolong teas. The second biggest tea producer is India, making their black tea varieties of Darjeeling and Assam. Perhaps surprisingly, Japan ranks 10th, beaten by the only European country in 6th place, Turkey. Although Britain does technically count as providing homegrown tea, albeit very small quantities of luxury blends. Yes. Being a nation of tea-drinking enthusiasts has enabled various tea bush estates to pop up over the years in suitable climate pockets, such as Cornwall, Wales, and Scotland. Admittedly, their starter seeds and stock plants of Camellia sinensis, the tea bush, have come from other black tea countries. However, through nurturing and experimental blending of varieties, each tea estate has managed to create their own unique flavour identity, a niche market. English tea historically was always a rare commodity for the very wealthy people of society because it was so expensive to import to Britain. Mind you, this did not stop various blends back then becoming synonymous with the British names of English breakfast or Earl Grey tea, for example. Particularly intriguing are the Earl Grey's legends of how this tea was created and named. Several stories relate to the aristocrat Charles Grey, the second Earl Grey, who was British Prime Minister in the early 1830s, though not all of them. Here are a couple of interesting ones. Charles Grey reportedly saved the son of a Chinese mandarin from drowning whilst visiting China and was gifted the tea blend as gratitude for his heroic act. There are many flaws in this version, mainly that Charles Grey never stepped foot in China, and the bergamot orange rind used to flavour Earl Grey tea is native to Italy and France. Closer to home, Earl Grey's family residence was Howick Hall, Northumberland, UK, where the natural waters possess strong mineral taste. To disguise this element in the tea, a possible Chinese mandarin friend helped Charles Grey blend black tea leaves with bergamot orange essential oils into a more pleasurable cup of tea, often served by Lady Grey at London afternoon tea parties. Whatever the brand name, making a cuppa is straightforward enough. Or is it? Due to tea having been around for thousands of years, many cultures embrace different methods of drinking tea, be it straightforward or more of a ritual affair, like the well-known Japanese green tea ceremony called Sado, literally translated as tea way. Special or high-quality teas should be drunk without milk to enjoy the full taste experience, whereas in the UK, we tend to opt for the tea with milk serving style. There seems to be two schools of thought why this tea serving method has no hard and fast rule. Science explains why preserving the taste of tea or the taste of milk apparently cannot exist in the same cup. Tea needs to be infused in fresh water that has just boiled in order to impart its best flavour. By adding milk first into the cup, this cools the water and stops the tea infusing properly. In other words, makes a weak tea. Those who like stronger tea need to add the milk last. Conversely, if milk is added last, it disperses proteins and becomes all separated by the hot tea liquid, making it weak milk. Those who like a milky tea should add the tea last. Now that is fine for loose leaf tea infusing, but what of tea bags? Fundamentally, tea bags that are designed to brew tea direct in a cup should have milk added last, thus retaining the heat of the water. A far cry from the first design tea bags, which were hand-sewn silk miniature sacks invented by Roberta Lawson and Mary McLaren from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, USA, in 1903. The paper vegetable fibre type of bag wasn't until 1930, and the now common rectangular shape did not appear until 1944. Today, some teabag filter papers are more exotic, made of abaca hemp, a type of fibrous banana plant grown in the Philippines and Colombia. May the humble cuppa continue to bring relief to those both near and far.
TNF Soundings.
Time now for our Boston Brew sight loss tips. For further details on any of the items and practical information in this bulletin, you can also contact Beacon's team of sight loss advisors on 01902 880 111.
More than 100 million cups of tea are made every day in Britain, and 97.5% of those are brewed from a bag rather than made from loose leaf variety, according to the UK Tea and Infusions Association. For anyone experiencing sight loss, the process of making a brew can be fraught with danger and mishaps, from the difficulties of boiling the kettle, the dangers of pouring piping hot water, to accidentally spilling the milk and even knocking over a mug or two. Thankfully, there are many low vision devices and aids available to help us continue making our own decent cuppa. Here's a few to help you with your brew.
Liquid level indicator. Liquid level indicators have been helping people with sight loss get their morning cuppa for more than 25 years. This compact, lightweight device has three metallic probes which indicate two separate liquid levels within a cup or mug by triggering audible alerts and vibrations. The first alert tells you when to stop adding hot water if you also want to add milk. The second alert tells you when the cup is nearly full. The device can be used on most cups and mugs, as well as glasses, jugs, and cold cooking pots. With the built-in magnets, the liquid level indicator can be conveniently stored on a fridge door, so it's always easy to find when you need it. It is recommended that you test the unit with cold water before each use to ensure the device has sufficient battery capacity to operate properly.
The easy open battery drawer makes changing the battery simple, and the beep confirms it is fitted correctly. As the unit is not sealed, a damp cloth to wipe clean the probes is all that is required.
Kettle tipper. The kettle tipper is a metal frame that has an adjustable secure strap, which allows the tipper to be used with a wide range of kettles and jugs. With the kitchen kettle strapped in and teacup positioned accordingly, the metal frame pivots to tilt the kettle's spout towards the location of the cup, helping to reduce spills. Another ingenious invention which allows you to boil and dispense hot water with the touch of a button is a one-touch kettle that you fill with water and it dispenses hot water one cup at a time. A smart and modern version of the kettle tipper. There's no need for lifting, pouring, or any of the awkward and potentially risky activities involved in making a good old cuppa. It's a great development for those who have dexterity issues or problems with fine motor skills, and as many users have put it, there's no longer any need to worry about pouring boiling water on yourself.
The Boil Alert Disc. The Boil Alert is a handy tool if you'd like a reminder that you have a saucepan boiling on the hob. Made of stainless steel, this unique aid warns you when water starts to boil in a saucepan. Simply place the alert in the bottom of a saucepan. It doesn't matter which way up, and it will rattle once the water starts to boil. Can be a useful prompt and audible aid. Anti-spill mug. The anti-spill mug has a clever suction design which keeps the vessel glued to any flat, non-porous surface. This makes the mug better at resisting knocks. Next up, we have another block of local news.
The new Mayor of Dudley has pledged to raise thousands of pounds for five charities during his year in office. Councillor Pete Lee was named the borough's first citizen at the annual council meeting on Thursday. After officially being sworn in, the Amblecote councillor named the charities he will be helping to raise money for in the coming year. They are Gurkha Welfare Trust, Guide Dogs for the Blind Association, the Leukemia Unit Appeal Fund, supporting the Georgina Unit at Russell's Hall, the Alzheimer's Society and Disability in Action, Queen's Cross Network. Councillor Pete Lee, Mayor of Dudley, said, "It is a huge honour and privilege to serve the residents of the borough as Mayor of Dudley. Over the past year as Deputy Mayor, I have enjoyed meeting so many individuals and organisations and hearing about the amazing work they are doing across the borough, and I'm looking forward to meeting so many more during the coming year. I am also looking forward to raising funds for these incredible charities so they can continue their incredible work." The Mayor has said he will be reintroducing the Lord's Prayer and the National Anthem to full council meetings. His wife Gloria will be mayoress. At the same time, Councillor Craig Collingswood has also been officially appointed Wolverhampton's 166th mayor. He took over the chains of office from outgoing mayor Councillor Linda Leach at the inauguration, which took place during the annual council meeting. His daughter Abby, a cardiothoracic nurse at New Cross Hospital's Heart and Lung Centre, is mayoress. Councillor Collingswood, who has served the Park Ward since 2012 and was Deputy Mayor for the 2024 to 2025 municipal year, said, "I am immensely proud and deeply grateful to become the first citizen of our great city. As a born and bred Wolfrunnian, it is an incredible honour, and I pledge to dedicate my time, energy and commitment to serve this amazing place to the best of my ability. Wolverhampton has a rich and proud history. It has witnessed remarkable changes and transformations and has long been a place where innovation and industry have thrived. And today it continues to be a city which embraces diversity, progress and opportunity. Our city's motto, "Out of darkness cometh light," serves as a beacon of hope and inspiration. It reminds us that even in the face of adversity, we have the power to advance, innovate and shine brightly. And this resonates today more than ever as we continue to work together to bring light to every corner of our city. My theme for the year is City and Wolfronians Ascend Together. This symbolises the collective ambition towards growth and progress. It represents the city's regeneration, whether through urban development or cultural revival, and highlights the resilience and aspiration of our residents. This ascension points towards collaboration, a shared sense of pride, community and empowerment as Wolfronians rise together to shape the city's destiny on a local, national, and even global stage. He added, "Abby will be a wonderful mayoress, and together we promise to act with integrity and put the interests of our city and Wolfronians first and foremost. Let us work together to make Wolverhampton an even better place for future generations, guided by the light that our motto so brilliantly embodies." Councillor Collingswood, who attended Manor Primary and Parkfields Secondary Schools, worked in occupational health in local government for many years before becoming a lecturer. His father was a Bilston councillor for 17 years, and following in his footsteps, Councillor Collingswood has served as the council's cabinet member for resident services and the environment, and as chair of the Audit and Risk Committee. Councillor Collingswood is also chair of the Wolverhampton Armed Forces Covenant Board. His son Jack is a trooper serving with the British Army in the Queen's Royal Hussars Regiment and is currently in Germany.
Also serving with the British Army in Germany, 80 years ago, was a local lad from the Black Country, John Haddock. The 102-year-old war veteran from Stourbridge recently detailed a fascinating account of how he came face to face with the Nazi war veteran Joachim von Ribbentrop during the Nuremberg trials. The Nuremberg trials were a series of military tribunals held in Nuremberg, Germany, from 1945 to 1946 to prosecute prominent leaders of Nazi Germany for war crimes, including crimes against humanity and conspiracy to commit war crimes. The trials were significant as they established a precedent for international law and accountability for war crimes. And for years, Joachim von Ribbentrop had portrayed himself as a respectable face of Nazi Germany. The suave diplomat, fluent in several languages, who travelled the world as Hitler's personal envoy. That's not how John Haddock remembers him and recalls how captivity and criminal charges appeared to have given the famous pompous Nazi foreign minister a reality check. "He was pretty impassive, stony-faced," recalls John, one of the last living people to have witnessed the historic hearings in the aftermath of the Second World War. "He was not very animated at all. Everything had to be said in German and translated into English, so it was a long, drawn-out process. It was the same with Karl Dönitz, Hitler's successor and the last president of Nazi Germany. He also saw Rudolf Hess, Hitler's dutiful deputy, who was disowned by the regime following his bizarre peace mission to Scotland in 1941. But it was Hermann Göring who proved the biggest draw, in more ways than one. Göring was the main one," he says. "He was an important man. He was second in command to Hitler. He was a big man, and he didn't move much. He just got fatter and fatter as the trial went on. He just sat there." Ribbentrop and Göring, responsible for so many deaths during the war, would pay for their crimes with their own lives, the latter taking his own life while awaiting execution. Dönitz was sentenced to 10 years in prison, publishing his memoirs on his release in 1956, while Hess died at Spandau Prison in 1987.
So how did John, a 23-year-old lad from Wensbury, come to see history being made? Fascinated by aircraft since childhood, he volunteered as a 19-year-old to join the RAF, where he eventually became a navigator and rose to the rank of flying officer. Like most men who served to the end of the war, there was quite a delay before demob. I was given quite an interesting job after the war finished, he said. I became a messenger. I used to carry the official reports from the Nuremberg trials back to London. I had the chance of going to the Nuremberg courts, watching the top Nazis sitting in the dock being tried. It was quite an eerie experience in a way. We got read stories about them committing atrocities in the period before and during the war. It was a big court and they were sat in a special room, protected by a glass window. We were sat behind the window watching the whole court. John's fascination with planes began when his father took him on a visit to Wolverhampton. The visit, as it happened, was to see an air display at an airfield, he recalls. I believe it may have been Penderford, but I'm not sure. It was what they used to call a flying circus, one of those little companies of aeroplanes flying from one part of the country to another, performing stunts and giving rides to the public in their modern, up-to-date biplanes. After that, I was always interested in aircraft. John completed his training in Canada before returning to Britain, where he was initially stationed on the East Coast. We started our operational work flying Bristol Bow fighters. We would regularly fly over Holland, Germany, Denmark, and Norway, he says. Then D-Day came along and we were sent down to the south coast, to RAF Manston in Kent. Our job was to patrol up and down the channel, before, during and after D-Day, looking for enemy ships. The Germans had what we called E-boats. They were very fast movers and had torpedoes. Our job was to try to stop them harassing our fleet. We operated at night, which was a bit scary if they shot at us. You couldn't see much unless there was a bit of moon. He describes sitting on his helmet to protect himself from enemy fire, dropping bombs on the boats below. It wasn't just the enemy he had to worry about either, with friendly fire always a danger, particularly in the dark. I'm pretty sure that happened a couple of times, twice when we were dealing with both British and American ships. The Americans had big ships and they used to be a bit trigger happy. A sense of youthful bravado helped them through it. It was all very exciting, really. Most of the lads were my age. We were all about 18 to 22. But if something happened to someone, particularly if it was someone close to you, that brought it home. I remember once seeing one of my friend's planes go down. That was quite hard to watch. But we didn't dwell on it. We had to just get on with it. After the invasion, John was sent up to Scotland, where he remained until VE Day. He recalls the end of hostilities as being something of an anticlimax. We all knew the war was coming to an end, and it was a case of what do we do now, he says. 3 days after VE Day, John and his squadron were given the task of returning Crown Prince Olav to Norway after 5 years in exile. There were the usual hazards of flying, but at least no one was shooting at us, he says. After demob, John went to work for the newly formed MEB, initially in the commercial department before training at Tipton Technical College as an electrical engineer. He has a son, John, 67, and daughter Barbara, 62. Now partially sighted, he is able to lead an independent life thanks to support from the charity Blind Veterans UK. He was told he would be awarded the Légion d'honneur medal by the French government on his 102nd birthday last autumn.
Up next, it's trivia time, brought to us by Flashback Roger and his Did You Know feature. Take it away, Roger.
Hello again, everyone. Well, here we go with another Did You Know spot. Every week, I think I'm going to struggle. So this week, I'm giving my brain a rest and revisiting some interesting ones from 4 years ago that I hope you wouldn't mind hearing again. So here goes. Did you know that the Third World doesn't refer to poor developing countries, but the reality is that after World War II, the world split into three large geopolitical blocks. The bloc of democratic countries with the American sphere of influence became known as the First World. The Eastern bloc of socialist states was the Second World. Reigning countries not aligned with either of the two were regarded as the Third World. And did you know? If you sign letters, or more likely text and emails these days, to those you love with an X, then you're keeping up a sweet tradition that goes back hundreds of years. The Oxford English Dictionary says that an X was first used to represent a kiss back in 1763 in a letter written by British naturalist Gilbert White. And did you know that the popular Keep Calm and Carry On slogan was originally created by the British government as a form of propaganda to urge citizens to stay civil during World War II, when London frequently endured air raids from Germany? Alas, it never caught on, and years later in the 2000s, poster was discovered, and many companies have used it as a slogan or marketing themes for their products. And did you know that when Gustav Eiffel designed the tower which bears his name, he added a hidden apartment on the third level of the landmark, but he never lived there. No one did. Instead, Eiffel used it to entertain guests. These days you can get a peek at the unique abode through a window if you purchase a ticket to prefer a ride up the tower. And here's a mystery solved, because the duffel bag and duffel coat both get their names from the town of Duffel in Belgium, where the cloth was used in the bags was originally sold. Fabric was a coarse thick woolen cloth that was originally used for the sturdy covering on ships. It's been suggested, though, that the origins of the bags were made out of scraps for sailors and explorers on their way out to sea. And finally this week, in March 2019, archaeologists in China reportedly found a 2,000-year-old bronze pot that contained 3.5 litres of a liquid that was referred to in ancient Taoist literature as the elixir of immortality. The elixir was found to be a mixture of potassium nitrate and alunite. Well, any road up for me, considering that the fact that it was discovered in a tomb, I think it's fair to say that it was about as useful as a chocolate teapot. Well, folks, that's your lot for this week. So I'll let you think about that last one, and I'll go and dunk a teabag in my old chipped enamel mug and get me a couple of obnobs and dream up some more bits and pieces for us to wonder at. But for now, though, I'll just say bye for now. Ta-ra a bit. Ta-ra.
Up now we have to hear what the weather has in store for us. Brought to us, come rain or shine, by our own sunny Mina.
Hi everyone, it's Mina here with your forecast for the week ahead. And hasn't it been another lovely week of weather? Well, after a surprising spell of sunshine throughout the month of May, all set to become rather more unsettled as we progress into next week. In result, the high UV levels we've been experiencing shall become a lot more varied, with levels ranging from low to medium and peaking at high in the sunshine we may find within any rain showers. The sunrise and sunset times are 4:55 a.m. for the sunrise and 9:15 p.m. for the sunset. As far as the weather, it is looking rather glorious for Friday 23rd of May, with unbroken sunshine continuing from dawn right through until dusk. Temperatures shall reach a high of 20 degrees, with a light westerly providing a pleasant, gentle and refreshing breeze. However, moving into the weekend, and it's looking like things will become a lot more unsettled, with plenty of showers forecast right across the region for Saturday 24th of May. The winds will pick up a touch too, with a southwesterly breeze keeping temperatures in check at 18 degrees. There is a chance the light rain showers may fizzle out on Sunday 25th of May, allowing for a relatively dry and sunny day, with highs of 19 degrees, but in true bank holiday style, the rain is holding out and ready to unleash itself on Monday. It's looking like it shall also remain with us as we progress through the week too, with rain showers and potentially more torrential thunderstorms forecast from Monday 26th right through to Thursday 29th of May. With a moderate breeze, temperatures will remain around 18 degrees. So it does look like we are set for something a little bit more like what we could expect from our weather in May. Do take care, have a wonderful week, and enjoy the weather.
Now it's time to find out how our local football teams have been getting on.
Hi guys, it's Wolves superfan Fraser here. On the weekend, I went to the Wolves v Brighton match. Not many games left of the season, and we were hoping this one was a good one. But unfortunately, we lost. Somehow, we managed to give away two goals to Brighton. And I thought that Kuna was playing particularly bad, giving away that penalty. I was so disappointed. But guys, let's just not end on a downer, because we've been playing so well lately up to now. So, let's hope we win our last two games, so Vitor Pereira can have a few more points. Go Vitor Pereira! Go Vitor Pereira! Come on me, Bobby!
Now, here come the quiz
answers.
And they're brought to us by Mina.
Here are your answers for this week's flashback quiz. Feeling confident? How will you score? Let's see. Question 1. Where was the term the Third World coined? And the answer? After World War II. Question 2. When did an X first used as a kiss to end a letter? And the answer here is 1763. Question 3. What well-used slogan today first appeared on posters in the 1940s in Britain? And the answer? Keep calm and carry on. Question 4. What was hidden in the Eiffel Tower when it was built? And the answer? An apartment. Question 5. The duffel coat is named after a town. Where is that town? Answer, Belgium. And finally, question 6. What was found in a flask in a tomb in China in 2019? And the answer, the elixir of immortality. Did you get them all right? If not, not to worry, as I will be back next week to test you all once again. Bye for now.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sight loss tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who without their support would be unable to run this free service. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us, stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!